Hi there, everyone, and welcome back to the Bumblecast. I am your Jedi Master, Ian Flynn, and joining me is my Padawan learner, Kyle Krause.
Hello, Internet.
And as you can tell, today's episode is all about Star Trek!
Star Trek? Who's tracking stars now?
Not that one. It's the other space opera. Galaxy Quest, there we go.
That's the one, yes.
Good old Tim Allen. Wait. Let me go through the notes. That's not it either. All right, I'm out of ideas.
Is it Battlestar Galactica?
Yeah, of course, that one.
Yes. The show I don't know anything about.
Me either.
All right, good. I'm glad. I'm not the only one.
Let's move on. We're talking about Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars, all of the time.
I'm glad one of us can sing.
Because, of course, Episode 7 is coming out later this week, and it will hopefully be good!
Hopefully. I am cautiously optimistic. I was going to say tepidly optimistic. I guess that fits, too.
Because, I mean, Abrams did really well by the last two Star Trek films.
For most people, yeah.
I mean,
For general audiences, yes. If you're a big fan of Star Trek, you probably hated both of them.
Yeah.
But
if you think hard about them, or you think about them at all, they kind of fall apart. But,
well, that goes pretty much anything for Star Trek.
Star Trek, and especially Star Wars, because you start to sit down and go through the original trilogy and say, here's where it isn't quite as amazing as you remember it being. You're like, yeah.
Yeah, that's very true.
So if 7 is at least as good as the original trilogy, and you can forgive any problems it has, it'll be good.
If it's at least on the level of 6 of Return of the Jedi, that'll be fine.
That's a good start.
Because I'd say of the original 3, Return of the Jedi is probably the weaker one. It's still a very good movie, but of the original trilogy, there are certain aspects of it that, to me, make it the weaker entry of the series.
I would almost say A New Hope, just because to me it feels like it drags in places. Jedi has its problems, but at least it keeps going.
True. Jedi is definitely paced well. The original movie, maybe not quite as well. I don't think they just didn't necessarily have. I don't know where I'm going with that.
It was new.
It was new.
Yeah. Nothing else like it at the time.
Right.
There are stories of how the extras in the big ceremony scene at the very end of the movie are muttering to themselves about how stupid this movie is and how it's not going to go anywhere. And for pity's sake, one of your lead actors is a carpenter. What are you doing?
There were a lot of people saying that at the time they were making it. According to George Lucas, there were a lot of reports that was not going to be a success.
And here we are.
How wrong they were.
Arguably the single largest contribution to pop culture in the history of mankind.
Yeah. It's definitely up there.
So what is your history with Star Wars, Kyle? Have you always been a fan? Have you always been one with the Force?
Ever since I was a little kid, probably about 7, 8, 9 years old. Trying to think. When did the prequels come out? Or not the prequels. The special editions. Those came out in 1995. So I must have been before. I saw the movies before that. I saw Empire and Jedi before that, probably in like 1993 or so. So I would have been 7, 8, if my math is correct. Yeah, about 7 or 8. So I saw Empire first. I didn't really understand what was going on,
but missed a part.
But I liked it, and I wanted to see more. So I remember going to the local video rental store back when those existed. Kids, remember those? Probably don't even know what we're talking about. But I remember going to the local video rental store, and they had Empire and Jedi, but they did not have A New Hope. So
weird.
Well, they didn't have it in. They were rented out.
Oh, okay.
The first one was rented out, so I ended up renting Empire and then Jedi, and watching them both that way. And I really liked them just as a kid. So I did miss the first part for a little while. I don't think I saw. I don't think I saw A New Hope until it came out in theaters, re-released in theaters for the special editions.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you got to experience the opening sequence where the blockade runner is running from the Star Destroyer for the first time in the theater?
Yeah.
I am jealous, sir. I am honestly jealous.
It was cool. It was awesome.
Because my dad had the original trilogy on VHS, the original VHS releases.
Yeah.
And for you small children out there, VHS was a form of media back in our day, you know, shortly after the dinosaurs and the world had thawed, where information was encoded on magnetic strips of tape, and that was plugged into a machine that played it like a cassette tape. You don't know what a cassette tape is either. Anyway, yeah, ever since, you know, I could sit in front of a TV for an extended period of time, so we'll say 8 months old, we had Star Wars almost on loop.
Yeah.
So it was quite the experience to go into the theater and see that opening bit and go, oh, so this is why everyone was so impressed back in the day. But you got to experience it pure. I am jealous.
Pure? Are we sure the special editions are that pure? Come on.
Well, no. But I mean that opening bit where, yes, you know, just the entire front of your vision fills with that Star Destroyer. And the speakers rumble and your seat shakes and you're like, oh.
It's a great visual in theaters. I will say that. It's pretty fantastic. I did see all three in theaters. So that was definitely an experience. I didn't really realize at the time that the special edition changes may not have entirely been for the better, but that's okay. That's okay.
And then I kept tweaking it after the fact, and but we'll get to the turn to the dark side.
Well, yeah, we'll talk,
we can't talk about Star Wars without getting into the prequels. So
why not?
I mean, hey, it's all part and parcel. See, when Disney took over, and they said, all right, the entire extended universe is out the window now. We're starting over.
That kind of sucks, but yes.
It does if you were invested in it. And there was some fun stuff. Like, I would have really loved to have seen Grand Admiral Thrawn realized on the big screen.
Yeah.
Mara Jade would have been cool.
Yes.
But there's a whole lot of stuff that didn't really need to be acknowledged, and I don't mind it being gone or, you know, kind of pushed off to the side. But why didn't they go whole hog and just toss the prequels out too and start over? You know, I don't think a lot of people would have blamed them.
No, but there's some people who actually like the prequels.
My youngest brother.
Most of them are younger, yes. I was going to say.
Who's like 14 years younger than me. He thinks episode 3 is the best. And it's like, oh, child. You're taller than me. You're smarter than me by far. But no. Empire is the best. And we will have to have a Jedi duel out back if you do not agree.
Now, if you can't get over the dated look of some of the effects, especially of the earlier movies, then you may have a tough time. I can understand maybe a younger audience having a tough time being enthralled by the original trilogy.
Sure.
But and I think just in terms of storytelling and writing and everything, that the first three, the original trilogy definitely works a lot better.
And that's what's got me so excited about Episode 7 is just looking at the trailers. It looks like it's taking the aesthetic of the original trilogy.
Yes.
Taking the limitations, taking the tropes that have become iconic for the series, and is using them in a way that continues the visual themes.
Yes.
Whereas the prequels really felt like we're trying to ape what we did before without understanding what was there and improving upon it.
I always felt that the prequels, effects-wise, just completely didn't jive at all with the originals at all, with the original trilogy. I was like, why is everything suddenly so much more, like, shiny and new and technology beyond what we've seen previously?
Right.
It just doesn't make any sense.
I mean, one could infer that, you know, if you watch it straight with no experience, you know, go episode 1 to episode 6, potentially you could see the prequels, you know, in the waning years of the Old Republic as the time of great prosperity, and thus with everything is more dialed back in the original trilogy, you see the decay that has happened under the rule of the Empire? Question mark? Shrug?
Maybe.
Trying too hard to make this work, maybe?
I've heard that there are, like, alternate viewing orders, all sorts of alternate viewing orders, rather than just going straight 1 through 6. Stuff that makes it make a little more sense. It's maybe a little more palatable, but I don't know. I haven't tried that.
Now, one thing I am a little sad that got pushed out when Disney took over is the Genndy Tartakovsky animated shorts, The Clone Wars.
Is that related to... That's not the cartoon Clone Wars, right?
Not the CG cartoon, no. That took the stylistic cue from the Genndy shorts. But Genndy Tartakovsky, who's known for Dexter's Laboratory, for Samurai Jack, I think he had a hand in developing Powerpuff Girls, you know, whose main thing is very stylistic art and a big focus on action telling the story rather than dialogue. There was this whole series of shorts that were only like a minute and a half long, but they told this sweeping story that was full of characterization, full of just crazy action, and, you know, really, really edge of your seat stuff. And because it was in such bite-sized chunks, there was no room for fluff. There was no room for fat. It was boom, 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 boom. Everything goes through quickly. Maybe they were 3 minutes long, because I remember that the season finale, quote-unquote, was a whopping 5 minutes. And nice. You're sitting there going, oh, wow, he gets 5 minutes to play with it. Oh, my God, this is going to be nuts. And it was. It was. And then they followed it up with a season 2 of episodes that were slightly longer, not like full episodes like you would think of a normal cartoon, but they, you know, had more time with them, and it bridged the gap between episode 2 and episode 3.
Oh, okay.
And
that just might be helpful.
The action sequences alone were phenomenal. There's a two-parter where Mace Windu is on Dantooine, and he's fighting the droid army by himself. And halfway through the fight, he loses his lightsaber, which just powers him up. He uses the Force to just, like, ninja flip and beat the ever-loving crap out of robots and disassemble them and use their disassembled pieces to shred others. And it's just ridiculous. I love it.
Mace Windu is awesome. I'm really disappointed he does not get that much of a chance to shine in the prequels, because he is awesome.
Well, I saw one review by Red Letter Media.
Yeah.
And it bugs me because the reviews are really insightful and their points are very well made.
Yes, I have seen.
It's just,
I think I've seen the one at least for Phantom Menace. Anyway, go ahead.
It's just the character that they have doing the reviews has all these creepy or disgusting cutaways. It's like, all right, if you're into that kind of humor, I get it.
Yeah.
I get what you're trying to do with it, but you have me so engrossed with this bit-by-bit dissection of the films, you're really just distracting me from the point. But something they were getting at in it was, why did you cast Samuel L. Jackson, who was known as this big, bombastic, huge presence on the screen, and cast him as this quiet, you know, reserved monk? Not saying he can't play the part, and he has to always play towards type. He's a more versatile actor than that.
Yes.
But, you know, if Mace Windu was more along the lines written and directed along the lines of, like, Nick Fury, you have that reserved, but he isn't so restrained that you lose all the power that is Mr. Jackson's ability.
Yeah, I don't really understand why they cast him in that role only to just not even use what he's good at.
I mean, Ewan McGregor, I think he was a great choice for Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I agree.
But what he was given was garbage.
Yeah.
And he did the best with what he could.
Yeah, he's one of the better parts of the prequels, I would say. Are there parts of the prequels that you do enjoy?
I did enjoy Darth Maul.
Speaking of criminally underused and misused.
I mean, I feel like all of the temporary villains were squandered.
Uh-huh.
It would have been better if they didn't restrict themselves to the whole "there are only two Sith at a time" nonsense, so that you had something of a secret order and maybe have Maul as your attack dog and Tyrannus as something of the mastermind behind the scenes. But I know, for what he was, for his presence in the film, he was boiled down to all he needed to be, which was this fearsome, violent thing to challenge the Jedi.
Right. He's kind of like a Bond henchman.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of it is, and I've spent way too much time thinking about this, but part of the problem with Episode 1, and there are many problems,
yes,
is that Liam Neeson, excellent actor that he is,
mm-hmm,
is not needed for Episode 1. He is a distraction.
Yeah. He's Obi-Wan completely there for no reason.
Obi-Wan doesn't need to come into his own. The film needs to be about Obi-Wan and his interactions with Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
The whole duel of fates thing should not have been Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. It should have been Obi-Wan and Anakin. With Anakin, you know, popping up at the last second to get maybe a cheap hit in, and show that violence, show that aptitude for the Force, and build the relationship between him and Obi-Wan. And that would have done more for the character in the first film than, you know, the entire trilogy combined.
Yeah, that would have been a lot more interesting.
See, I challenge myself with this in that, you know, everyone says, oh, I could have done the prequels better, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion. Ultimately, it's Lucas's story, and right, it wasn't good, but it's his. So when I, you know, get frustrated with the prequels, which I do ever so much, I try to challenge myself saying, okay, this is what Lucas set out to do. This is the story he wanted to tell. How do I rewrite it and still hit the points that he wanted to hit? It's really easy to toss the whole thing out and say, oh, I would have done it this way, which is the height of arrogance. It's to say, how do you tell the story, but more concisely?
Yeah.
I think is the bigger challenge. And I don't know, it's probably the ego stroking saying that I thought of that myself, but, you know, whatever. To me, I think the biggest change that really would have helped the film out was to have made Anakin a teen from the get-go.
That would have been a lot more... That, first of all, would have made the romance a lot more believable and understandable. Exactly. And not weird and creepy.
So have him be a teenager so he can... it's easier for him to emote his frustration. I mean, you have the reason for him to be easily susceptible to the dark side right there. He's a slave.
Right.
Tatooine is on the fringe of the Outer Rim. The Old Republic doesn't do anything for them. So when he comes to the inside and sees the decadence and sees how well they're living, there's a lot of resentment to be had right there that people will understand. It's a class thing.
Yeah.
You don't have to write it extensively. All you have to do is have him look at a bunch of posh nobles walk by and sneer, and boom, you've told them everything that you need to tell them.
Yeah, we didn't need three movies of trade agreements. We didn't. I know it had to build up a political aspect of it. It's the fall of the Republic, but it just seems like it just drags on and on way too far, way too long.
Right. So have the conflict already started in episode one. Have it so that when they're going to Naboo, have them rescuing Queen Amidala and Senator Palpatine, because the war is already almost on the verge of happening. The planet's been taken over.
Yeah.
There's no negotiations to be had. They're rescuing diplomats because the war is coming. Right there, boom, you've really accelerated the story. You've gotten to the high point because people want to see the ships shoot each other. They don't want to see people debate.
Yeah, exactly.
They still have the political intrigue.
We need that shoot, shoot, pew, pew. That's Star Wars. Come on.
And personal pet peeve is, if Anakin's going to build one of the original droids, have him build R2-D2.
That might have... I don't know. What difference would that have made?
Well, here, look at it this way. In the original movie, Anakin builds C-3PO, who's a protocol droid, whose entire point is to translate and be a diplomat.
Right.
If he is a scrap junker worker mechanic
in the
middle of nowhere space, why does he need that? R2-D2 is an astromech droid, a droid that is built to repair ships, to build things. It's a walking toolbox.
Right, okay, and
And he's got that blue-collar, sassy feel to him anyway. Meanwhile, on Naboo, everything is very polished, all very shiny metals, golds, and silvers. Have C-3PO be an attendant to Amidala. He's shiny gold. A queen needs someone to help her with multiple diplomats, multiple languages, multiple customs, and it would fit the whole Prissy attitude if he's from upper-crust society.
You know what? You make an excellent point. Man, that one little change would have made a lot of difference.
And since Lucas really wanted it to be the prequels to mirror, or at least reflect how the original trilogy went,
right?
You have Luke and R2 as this buddy duo flying around blowing stuff up. If you had Anakin and R2 flying around, there's your mirror right there.
Yeah, that would have worked a lot better.
I mean, I appreciate the effort of kind of throwing a wrench into things, throw you the curveball. Ooh, Vader built C-3PO. That's so kooky.
Yeah.
But in terms of the narrative, in terms of the thematics, it's kind of more of a stumbling block than anything else.
I would say that would definitely make a lot more sense, especially since Anakin is a pod racer. He would need someone to a droid or some sort of assistant to kind of help him work on his racer or do anything like that. It would make a lot more sense.
And that right there, you know, during the pod race sequence, Anakin has to fix things on the fly, literally. Yeah. If R2 was part of it, like if that was his bonus, that his tiny little thing had an R2 unit in there. That, again, is the parallel between, you know, Luke and R2, you know, fixing their stuff on the fly. So,
that could have worked. The, I guess pod racing rules might have had to change a little bit, though, for that. I don't think any of the other racers have R2 units, but it could have done anything it wanted.
Exactly. And, I mean, it's not like Lucas would have shied away from an opportunity to have yet another thing to sell.
Right.
Okay, more, so more instead toys. Of Sebulba in his giant honking speeder, it's Sebulba in his giant honking speeder with R5-D2.
Yeah.
Or beep, bop, knick-knack, whatever you call it.
Well, something. More accessories. Cram them in there. Cram them in there.
And then the final big moment the big thing that drives me nuts is in episode 3. When Obi-Wan and Anakin have their confrontation on Mustafar.
Yes.
And Padme stows away, and Obi-Wan isn't able to detect three life forces on his ship. And Anakin gets all pissy and chokes Amidala unconscious. Obi-Wan spends about 10 seconds to go, oh, she's unconscious, and then he gets into his grim battle with Anakin, while the pregnant lady lies dying on the floor on the lava planet. That drove me crazy. That and, you know, at the end, she gives birth to the children and then dies because she has no will to live. Her will to live is her children.
Mm-hmm.
The children that she's been so excited for, the children that she wants more than anything to see brought into the world. She dies because she said her man was angry at her. So, easy fix. Easy fix. If we have Anakin as an older person in the first film.
Yeah.
So the romance is easier built.
Yes.
By the second film, we can have that romance blossom, but we're also seeing Anakin's more brutal side, because he is a bully when you get down to it. By the third film, Amidala's realized, uh-oh, I kind of got with a bad man, and there's a war going on, so nobody's really going to be looking at me to help. She has all these body doubles, as established in the first film. Have one of those body doubles stand in. Anakin thinks he kills the body double. That way Amidala can slip off, take a new name, and she's able to act as a servant because she hides as one of her own servants, as established in the first movie.
Yes.
And she's able to raise Leia under the guidance of Bail Organa. That way, when we get to episode 6 and Leia has memories of her mother being very sad, that all is tied together. Maybe you can have Amidala die off later because she's so sad that her children are separated and she can't even truly raise the one daughter she's around. That makes enough sense. Having her go, I'm sad, I'm dying, it's just frustrating.
That is a big plot hole that I never realized until now. You mentioned how she says, Leia says she remembers her mother being sad. I'm like, oh yeah, she did say that, didn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Man, that is a massive, massive plot hole. You could drive an exercise truck through that one, man.
You can make the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs in a plot hole that size. Yeah,
jeez, man.
And man. I was huge into Star Wars at the time. Like, I was reading Extended Universe stuff. I was buying the big manuals, the guides to the planets and the vehicles and the alien races.
Yeah.
So I was following the website, and they had someone in character from the Jedi Archives answering fan questions as the prequels came out. And I really did not envy that person's job. And they get to the, you know, Leia says she remembers her mother being sad. How could she do that if she was dying as she was born? And the official answer on the website was, well, she sensed it through the Force while she wasn't still, you know, in utero. And it's like, I can smell the Bantha Poodoo from here. I'm sorry, but no.
I always hated how she just spat out the names of her kids as she was dying and giving birth to them. That was that was really might arguably be more contrived than the big no, but I don't know. It's up there.
So I think there's a good story in the prequels somewhere, especially with Palpatine manipulating the entire galaxy into setting himself up as supreme ruler. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I think the script just needed a couple more once overs.
It needed someone to tell Lucas no.
That's what the original trilogy had.
He was limited by the technology at the time and the fact that he wasn't George Lucas.
Yeah, and he had people assisting on the scripts with the original trilogy, too.
And there was a...
And there were people who were telling him, no, you can't do this. This is weird. This is insane. Why would you do this?
Right. There was this making of documentary for episode two, where they have the Dexter Jet Setter, the big four-armed guy in the diner sequence, if you even remember that.
I think so, yeah.
I liked him. But anyway, you had the production crew making all these head sculpts and all these mock-ups, and on this table are at least 100 different alien concepts, all of them highly varied. And Lucas comes in to, you know, pick the one he's going to use for Dexter. The reverence in the room was as if the Pope had walked in.
Mm-hmm.
All of them wringing their hands, staring at him, looking like they're about to pee themselves. And he arbitrarily picks up one and goes, yeah, I kind of like this one. And somebody rushes in, holds up the one that's Dexter and says, we were kind of thinking this one. Oh, yeah, okay, do that. And that right there said a whole lot more about the entire production process to me than anything else.
Uh-huh.
So I really think, I know it's his baby, but he really needed someone to weigh in and say, George, no.
He needs someone to rein him back, yeah.
That said,
like, that's when he works best.
While cranky as I, salty as I may be, mm-hmm, over the prequels and their squandered opportunity, I can't be really mad at George himself, Mr. Lucas, excuse me. Because do you know what he's doing with the billions of dollars he got from Disney?
Isn't he donating most of it or all of it to charity?
Donating a whole bunch of it, using a bunch more to build affordable housing for low-income families.
That's right. Yep, I do remember seeing that.
In the ritzy part of town, just to piss off his neighbors.
Well, yeah. I gotta give him credit for that. That's pretty hilarious.
I can't
awesome.
Be too mad at him after that. Yeah, the movie sucked, but you're doing good things with the money, so you're not a bad guy.
He's gonna drive their property values down, and it's gonna be glorious.
Who said the dark side couldn't be fun?
Exactly. The dark side's arguably the most fun.
If only you knew the entertaining power of the dark side. Oh, I am afraid the cake and balloons will be here by the time your friends arrive.
Oh, man. George Lucas is kind of a troll.
Behold the full entertaining power of this fully operational birthday party. I didn't want this birthday party.
Okay, I'm good. I'm serious. I'm here.
Party pooper. Party pooper.
Okay, I'm back. I'm here. Oh, man. Anyway.
And I realize this is a marketing juggernaut. The whole reason why Lucas has his millions to begin with is because he retained the toy rights and people gobbled it up. But I have to question some of this. I mean, when you're marketing Vader with a big candy cane instead of a lightsaber, it's like nothing says Christmas like a child murderer who had his limbs chopped off and set on fire, and now he seeks to kill everyone.
Is this a thing?
Yes. It was in, like, the Hallmark store. It's like, all it needed was the tagline, if only you knew the power of the Yuletide.
That sounds awful. Lucas doesn't have his hands on this anymore, though. We can't blame him. We can't blame him.
This is all Disney going crazy. I blame
Disney.
I mean, it's printing money, but still.
Well, yeah. That just shows how much nerd culture has just gone insanely explosive.
If you want to talk about insane nerd culture, my confession time.
Go ahead.
I own a copy of the Star Wars Monopoly.
That's fine.
On the back of the instruction manual is a cipher for the Imperial alphabet, because all the money is written in the Imperial alphabet.
Really? That's kind of cool, actually.
The real alphabet, you know, A, B, C, D, it can be sung to the tune of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star.
Yes.
Arabesh, the Imperial alphabet, can be sung to the Imperial March.
Well, yeah.
Arish, Besh, Kesh, don't ash. The fact that I remember these fake letters is ridiculous.
Well.
And that I tried it. It's just, oh, shame.
I don't know. It's like remembering Klingon. It's not that bad.
That's true. That's true. It's one of these days I'll sit down and go through Shakespeare and Klingon. Those look like fun.
Is that a thing?
Oh, yeah.
I guess it would be. I guess it makes sense.
What have they done? Romeo and Juliet, Hamlet. Oh, I forget what else. But they've done at least two or three works of Shakespeare in Klingon. And it's not just, you know, here's the little side note on how to, you know, say this line. It's the whole thing has been rewritten and translated and, I guess, localized.
Sure, we could say localized.
And given how bloody some of Shakespeare's plays go, I mean, it makes sense for Klingons, but...
There's the original trilogy of Star Wars, actually, speaking of Shakespeare, done in Shakespearean English, Elizabethan English. There's a whole book series of them. And supposedly it's pretty hilarious. What was that?
Vader, O Vader, wherefore art thou, Vader?
Anyway.
Doth thou callest me a scruffy nerf herder? Is the law with me if I do? Nay. Nay, sir, I say there are scruffy nerf herders, but I do not say that thee art a scruffy nerf herder. To die, to sleep, perchance to learn the ways of the Force.
I don't know if they're directly riffing on exactly.
Oh, it's probably, well, far more entertaining and well thought out than that. I'm just riffing.
I'm entertained. I don't know about everyone else. I am entertained.
Anyway, I was huge into Star Wars, fell off the bandwagon when Episode 3 just kind of crushed all my hopes and dreams with it. But now with Episode 7, I'm starting to get back on that bantha.
I'm looking forward to seeing it in February.
You're not going to see it day one?
No. First of all, tickets are already long gone. And second of all, I always wait. It takes me a while to get to a theater to see a movie. Because there's people there. And people just, they get in the way. They're distracting.
They do.
I don't like people. Hey, I do podcasts. I don't know why I do podcasts if I don't like people so much. Really, though, I just do prefer going to a movie with less people. I definitely don't like to be crowded in there.
That's understandable. I mean, some movies, you kind of benefit from the crowd experience. Others, not so much.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true.
But to the end of getting back into things, have you seen the new cartoon, Star Wars Rebels?
I haven't watched any of the cartoons, unfortunately. I know. I've heard that a lot of them are really good, and I should definitely get around to it, but...
I was skeptical, honestly, but I took the plunge on Rebels, and I've caught up with, I guess, the newest stuff in Season 2. And overall, it's pretty solid. It's really enjoyable. It has its stumbling points here and there. But overall, it feels like a fun space adventure that takes place in the Star Wars universe without hinging too hard on, here's the Star Wars universe.
True. Did you see the CG cartoon? The older one from a few years ago?
The Clone Wars.
Clone Wars, yeah, that's it.
No, I caught bits and pieces here and there and was not impressed by it. I've heard that my opinion is wrong, so maybe I'll get back to it.
Okay.
But Rebels is kind of a spiritual sequel to Clone Wars.
Ah.
I know fans of the show were really put out because it was due for, I think, Season 6, and then that got scuttled when Disney took over and said, you're doing Rebels now? Yeah, I can see why people would be salty over that, but
that makes sense.
It seems to be picking up somewhat where Clone Wars left off. One of the principal characters from Clone Wars appears in Rebels after a bit of a time skip, so You kind of get a general continuation there.
Hmm. Yeah, I should probably sit down and watch some of that stuff eventually. When I get around to it. What about the video games? What I wanted to touch on the video games a little bit, since, you know, we're both big gamers.
We are.
What do you think about some of the video games? Which, what are some of your opinions, some of your favorites, maybe?
I haven't played a Star Wars game in a long time. I did play a little bit of Battlefront at my brother's place.
The new one?
Yeah, the new one. The one that has almost no content and is very bland.
The Battlefront 2015.
Yes, just to clarify. That one was fun, just me and my brothers goofing around. But if you were looking for a more robust gameplay experience, I could definitely see how it would be less than satisfactory.
If you're looking for a more robust gameplay experience, you probably want to go back to Battlefront 2.
I think the last game I really truly played was Knights of the Old Republic, which tells you how dated I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mid-2000s. I couldn't really get into it. I don't know, it was weird. I guess I just wasn't used to that style of gameplay, the RPG style, the Western RPG style specifically. Mm-hmm. It wasn't what I was expecting.
That might have been why. You can definitely see where Mass Effect grew out of it.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was like, actually, was Mass Effect. And I enjoyed what I've played so far of Mass Effect, so maybe I should go back to it and see.
It shows its age, and the opening sequence where you're stuck on one planet takes a long time to get through.
I do remember it being a slog.
But once things start get rolling, as your party expands, as you start doing subquests on other planets, then things start getting really interesting. And when you start to delve into the mystery of who your character is and how he ties into the Sith organization, things get pretty neat.
Hmm. Yeah, I might sit down and play some more of it at some point. This was back in, like, when it first came out, when I played it, like, 2003, 2004.
I think it's on Steam now for pretty cheap.
I have it. I got it in, like, a big Star Wars bundle at some point. It's like, oh, hey, a bunch of Star Wars games for, like, $5. I'm in. Even if I don't play them all, I'm in.
I think the other console game I played last was Podracer.
Podracer is actually a really good game. That whole sequence was made for a video game, I think.
Pretty much. But did you know about the trick on the N64 version?
Which trick was that?
If you plugged in a controller into the first and third ports, each controller controlled a separate engine.
Oh. I did not know that. So you could get a real-life experience,
you know. You could, you know, each one had their separate accelerators, each one had their separate balances. It made things almost impossible, but I'm bad at racing games anyway. But it definitely added something new and different to the racing genre.
That makes it a little bit more like the arcade version.
Mm-hmm.
Because the arcade version had separate controls for each engine. It was set up like a real pod racer.
And if you did two-player, the other player could plug into ports 2 and 4 to control their engines as well.
Nice. I'm going to have to try that. I wonder if that works with the Dreamcast version.
I don't know.
Huh. That'd well, the really Dreamcast has
to do with its controllers.
The Dreamcast has 4. Yeah, it would be. That's true. The Dreamcast does have 4 controller ports, but it does have interesting controllers.
Oh, what they should totally bring to the virtual console. Rogue Squadron off the N64.
I'm going to say the PC version. The PC version, it just looks a lot better.
All right, I'll give you that one. But the game itself,
right,
regardless of platform, freaking phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. I think that's actually on Steam as well.
I can't remember if it was the first game or the second game, but you play the Battle of Endor, and you're making the attack approach on the Death Star, And you hear Lando come in saying, nope, 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 back off. You turn around, and there's the entire Imperial fleet. And you turn on your targeting computer, and you see all those TIE fighters swarming at once. You're like, oh my god!
That seems like, that sounds like the sequel, which I think was on GameCube. Is that Rogue Leader?
Yeah, that was it. That was it.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was so much fun.
I love those games. The Rogue Squadron series is just fantastic. Good arcade fun.
I mean, there were some controller-breaking rage quit moments, but overall, just fantastic.
I have good memories of the cheat codes from the original Rogue Squadron.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So much fun to be had there.
That and the, what was it, a sedan? Some kind of car.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the best ship in the game.
I was like, the Naboo Starfighter was actually pretty good, too. And this was well before the prequels even came out.
Yep.
Which was really weird.
I also liked it was a nice touch that if you were on a planet mission, the cockpit was open, but if you went to space, you could see the force field appear over the dome.
Hmm. I'll have to go back and see that.
At least I remember that happening.
My memory is foggy.
Sometimes. And then I gotta mention my first Star Wars game, which was TIE Fighter.
Ah, yes, yes.
The one that made me rewatch the original trilogy and go, maybe these rebels aren't all that good after all. And gave me my boy, the TIE Defender.
Oh, yes. TIE Defender. Yes. That was, I think the TIE Defender is the TIE ship in Rogue Squadron, too.
Was it in there?
I think, I don't remember if it was a cheat code or if you can unlock it, but you do get a salvaged TIE, I believe it's a TIE Defender. And it's freaking awesome.
Oh, X-Men, you got 4 cannons? How cute. I have 6.
I always prefer
tractor beam hyperdrive capabilities.
I always preferred the gun noise of the TIE fighters too.
Oh yeah.
Over any of the rebel ships.
Well, they're far more threatening.
Oh yes.
What about you? Your top Star Wars games?
Well, the first level of Shadows of the Empire is really amazing. Oh. It's pretty mind-blowing, actually. I just remember starting that game up, and first of all, having an actual credits roll in a game, and that pretty much sounded just like the movies. Because the Super Nintendo games had that, but it was obviously very synthesized. The music was obviously very synthesized, Super Nintendo style, chiptune stuff. The N64 was definitely a little bit more capable in the sound department. So to have it sound and look correct was just awesome. And then getting into the Hoth battle and fighting on Hoth yourself in a speeder, that's still one of those gaming moments that's like, man, my memory of it, I know, is a lot more vivid and awesome than the actual game is. The game doesn't quite hold up. The game really doesn't hold up, actually, the rest of it, but that opening level, still really good.
Did you ever get the ultimate cheat code to work on that?
Maybe. What was that exactly?
It was tricky. You had to hold down every single button on the N64 controller.
Easier said than done.
It took both hands, and then I had to move the control stick with my nose and go half left, half right, half left, half right. I forget how many times. And then you would hear a boop, and then it gave you everything. You could change the color levels. You could play as enemy units. You could turn on no clip, infinite health, all items, all weapons. You could have the jetpack at the very start of the game.
Nice.
You could play as a Wampa. Remember the Wampas in their cells?
Yes.
You open that up, you hit the right code, you are the Wampa walking around just beating the ever-loving out of Stormtroopers.
I do remember playing that a lot with a Game Shark, because I had a Game Shark for the N64 at the time. So I do remember doing a lot of that stuff. So
that was probably the far easier way than the the face code.
That was the face code. That was definitely debug mode, I think.
Oh, it was amazing.
Oh, man. That does sound cool.
That's a huge game, too. I mean, the Ord Mantell level itself was, like, as big as the game, so...
Yeah, the levels were gigantic. But I don't think they hold up nearly as well as we hope.
Yeah. Of course, it's all pushed off to the side now. It's not canon, so...
Is that game non-canon?
Canon.
Well, it was a book, too. It wasn't, considered extended universe, but whatever. Going back to the movies real quick, there's actually, I'm more looking forward to, personally, Rogue One. Have you seen anything about that?
Only that it's coming. I haven't really seen anything else.
Okay. I've seen some pictures of it, and of course we have the basic story. And I'm personally a little bit more interested in that. We're getting, first of all new characters. Nobody's coming back. And it's basically what happened between episode 3 and 4. It's basically how the rebels get the Death Star plans.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to that, I think.
It's going to be exciting.
Yes.
And then episode 8, and then what's the Solo movie that comes after that? Is that the Han Solo prequel?
I think so. The Han Solo movie.
Yeah.
The Han Solo movie.
And then episode 9, and then is it Boba Fett or Yoda?
I don't remember. Off the top of my head.
No, we've talked about Star Wars enough. Let's get to questions!
Are we getting... We're getting to the Q&A? Already?
Let's go to the Q&A.
Okay, alright. Hope you guys enjoyed that, our Star Wars discussion there. Pretty lengthy.
Just a bit.
Yeah.
And
all right.
If we run into a question that I feel a little awkward about, I'm going to turn it over to Chewbacca to answer.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. We're getting into the Q&A now. All these questions are directed toward Ian, since he is the writer of the Sonic the Hedgehog comic book for Archie Comics, Sonic the Hedgehog, and Sonic Universe. And now, as of this week, or last week when this comes out... You are published as a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles writer.
Yeah, I am.
That is
I'm
awesome.
I'm so excited for that.
Oh, man. I'm going to head to the store and pick that up. Not right now, later, but I'll do it.
Oh, yeah, it's a bit late.
I'll do it. Well, it might still be. Yes. Yeah, they'll still be open. They're open pretty late, actually. I'm surprised. Anyway, my local comic shop. They're pretty cool. Anyway, you are the writer of all those comic books, so all these questions are directed at you and toward you and related to said books. So let's get into it. Jazzy Man Studios asks, is there going to be any explanation for how the Mobians were created / how they came to be for the new universe?
They are there.
Okay.
I'm treating it like the Tolkien-esque universe. You know, you have elves and men and dwarves, and they all exist, and there you go.
Okay.
Technically, I believe the official word from Iazuka-san is that the Mobians are not really Mobians. They're nameless animals.
Right.
That come from a different world entirely, and they interact with Earth through some kind of portal.
Hmm.
Not taking that approach myself, but we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
So your thoughts on it, Chewy? Thank you.
So the original comic explanation is out the window then?
Yeah.
Because this was previously covered, but yes, out the window. Got it. Jeremy Cruiser asks, have you personally devised resolutions to dangling cliffhangers in the games? Examples, Sonic 4 Episode 2 and Sonic Chronicles. Even if you don't expect them to end up in the comics?
As far as a fanon approach, I suppose. Probably shouldn't go into too much detail about what I know of episode of Sonic 4 Episode 3, because that's kind of dicey. As for Sonic Chronicles, I think it's pretty clear you would have, to tie it back into Star Wars, something of an Empire Strikes Back story, because Eggman's taken over at that point. You have the full party. It would just be them running train on Eggman and saving the day. So if there's greater details, I don't know if we'd ever get a chance to use them in the book. So nothing I've very seriously considered, I guess.
All right. Almighty Lantern asks, I've always wanted to see more of what kind of relationship Eggman had with his grandpa, Gerald. Ever consider exploring it?
I'd love to, but that falls into the tricky situation where Sega of Japan doesn't want us really exploring the backstories or showing the characters as any age than they are in the official media. There are, of course, ways I've worked around it, things I've kind of been sneaky about, but overall, we probably wouldn't get the opportunity to do so.
Ah, that's a shame.
It is.
Yeah, it would be nice if they could ease up on that, but I can see why they wouldn't want to do that for canon characters.
I mean, never say never. For a while, we couldn't touch Omega or Cream, and now they are regular characters, so yeah. I don't know.
Tsurugi asks, what works do you look to for inspiration when writing the Sonic and Mega Man comics outside of the games?
I guess it's hard to pin down just one thing, but any stories that I feel like are told in a good way, stuff that I find interesting or witty or creatively put together because I want to do something like that. Stories that are put together in a way that, you know, pay off in the immediate and in the long term.
Yeah.
I can't really narrow it down to a single thing. It's like, oh, I watch this show or I listen to that music. It's just, there's a wide variety of books and movies and TV shows and such that I feel do a good job of telling episodic or at least good stories in their own right. And I try to emulate that or at least match their level of creative output.
Do you have examples or?
Well, I mean, I can always go back and say Full Metal Alchemist is utterly brilliant in its entire composition. The new Ninja Turtles cartoon is a good example of an episodic show that tells a bigger story. Steven Universe is an excellent example of individual episodes that all build up to a greater whole. I'm blanking out on a lot of other things because I think I got completely Star Wars'd out.
Would you say maybe Star Wars? some aspects of it?
Maybe elements of it, sure. I got dazzled by sights of Jawas in my eyes, but really, it's a... I can't narrow it down to just one thing, and I know I'm forgetting a ton of examples of games and movies and books that I would like to cite as well, but...
Oh, yeah.
There's no one source. It's just I try to go with what I like and what I know works.
Awesome. All right, Metal Skulk Bane asks, do you have any control over which artists you're given, or are you given whoever is free?
Chewy? Exactly. I have no control over
it. No control. All right. I didn't think so, but...
I can ask. There's a storyline coming up in Sonic where I specifically asked if this particular artist is available. I would love it if they could do this. And so far, it's working out that way, but I don't have that kind of clout, you know? And I also don't want to be throwing my weight around too much because I'm just the writer. I'm not the editor. I don't know what everyone's schedule is. So,
right.
No, I have no control over it.
He goes on to talk about Championship with Diana Skelly. And did that just happen to work out or did you specifically ask for her or?
No, that was just happy happenstance. That was
sheer luck.
That was Paul Kaminsky right before he left the series, said was trying her out on off panels, and then threw her into the deep end with Champions. And there are very few I would want elsewise on that story. She did such a freaking amazing job. Everything about it was perfect. The energy, the fun, the bounciness, the kinetic feel of each panel. It was delightful.
We of course have to heap praise on that entire arc on every episode, it seems. Because that arc is fantastic.
It came together rather well, yeah.
Yeah. I absolutely loved it. I was like, this is a Sonic the Fighters adaptation that is just absolutely fantastic and just takes the source material and runs with it big time, because Sonic the Fighters, it's a pretty crazy crazy idea. But the way you just managed to work it in and actually work a story around it, which I don't think there was really any story over the original Sonic the Fighters, was there?
Well, the original story was Tails detects that the Death Egg 2 has been built.
Oh, that's right.
And he builds the Lunar Fox that will take one fighter up to destroy it, but it needs all 8 Chaos Emeralds. So whoever you play as is beating the crap out of everybody else to take their Chaos Emeralds to get in a rocket to beat the crap out of Eggman.
Side question, how many Chaos Emeralds are there?
7.
Okay.
Except for the Master Emerald.
Okay, so 8.
Quiet, you.
At least it's not 8 million anymore.
Or the gold Chaos Emerald, if you want to count that, too.
8 million identically colored emeralds. Anyway.
Yeah.
Exactly, Chewie. You are absolutely correct. All right. We got a bonus question this episode. We're upping the questions to 6. Hopefully getting a little bit more in each episode, because you guys are asking a lot of questions. Keep them coming in, by the way. Keep them rolling. I want to hear more. All right. This last question. The JC Freak asks, how do you go about building the world of the Sonic comic?
Well, see, first you mix a little bit of water into the cement, you stir it thoroughly, and then you apply it to the bricks one by one.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously. What I do first is look at what the game content is. And from there, look at what it would mean for the rest of the world. Take any unanswered questions, any questions raised by events, and try to answer them. Try to flesh them out a little bit. And part of it, too, is taking elements from the two cartoons, working them in, see how they would fit into Sonic's world. And I guess part of it is, too, is looking at what do the games provide and what do they not? And where they don't provide, because, you know, the focus is on the gameplay, not the story, as it should be, that gives me room to flesh things out. The entire Moropus arc. You know, we've never really seen what do aquatic Mobians look like. So that entire story arc was built around discovering that.
Mm-hmm.
With Breezy's Casino Empire. You know, we get a glimpse into what is the economy of the world. With each visit we have to various places around the globe during the last few bits of the Shattered World arc, you know, we have these regions. What do the people dress like? Who are they like? What do their cities look like? What's the terrain like? And explore that a little bit. And dabbling here and there, what are the politics? What are the hierarchies? What are the countries of the world? Because really, that doesn't matter in a Sonic game, but when your focus is on the story, which is, you know, the whole point of the comic,
yeah,
that gives you room to explore and expand upon it. There's no tried and true way to approach it, I guess. There's no formula. I just kind of look at what's there and then say, okay, what else? And build from there.
He actually has a couple of follow-ups, too. This is more on the technical end, I suppose. I don't know if it's really that technical. But do you create, like, a full series overview, like a Bible, and then build on it from there, series Bible? Or do you you just kind of start with what you have and then build on it as you go along?
I do have a personal series Bible that I've made for myself that I kind of reference and that I'm fleshing out that will eventually be used, I would assume, for the book proper. I haven't submitted it to the editor yet just because it's full of wild ramblings and here's what I would like to do 3 years from now and, you know, glorious typos, and it really needs to be refined. It's not like I'm withholding information. It's because there's no way we can work as far ahead as I plan. But I like to look ahead at, you know, what we're doing now, what I would like to do in the future, and what that means for the characters in the world going forward. So stuff that we've done in Shattered World is laying the groundwork for stuff that I want to do post-Shattered World, which will have implications in the storylines after that. And how does each one lead into the other so that it isn't just pointless little, well, not pointless, but individual free-floating stories, and instead something that comes together as an overall narrative that feels like it's always going somewhere. Because that's the real challenge with this book, is that you can't really have any concrete growth of character or any major change to the world, because it always has to match what the license has.
Right.
So I have to find ways of telling stories that continue to evolve and grow and change in engaging ways without going anywhere.
That's true. That is one reason why I do enjoy the book so much, though, is because you do maintain most of the status quo, but you do it in a way that's really clever and still just fun to read, and there is still larger implications, like the whole Shattered World aspect, that you can still resolve down the line.
I mean, part of what I'm so excited about Shattered World is by the end of it, we will have set up so many regions and so many extra characters and so many plot threads that I could take any one of them and go for a while. So it's almost like we've had months of prologue and it's just going to go crazy after that.
You can just go whole hog on just even one aspect. Yeah, whole of what hog, whole up. Hog. Thank you.
Hear that, Chewie?
Chewie didn't like that. Chewie was not pleased. All right, I think that wraps up the Q&A.
Alrighty, it's plug time!
Plug it in, plug it, whatever.
Alrighty, so if you're looking for stuff by me, and I so hope you do, Sonic the Hedgehog and Sonic Universe newest issue should be out just before Christmas. The final issue of Mega Man number 55, should be out the week before that, so very soon after this podcast. And Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Amazing Adventures number 5, my debut issue with the Ninja Turtles Turtle Power, comes out the week before this podcast comes out. So if you haven't gotten it already, please go out and get it now. You can always follow me on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC or my website, BumbleKing.com. That's Bumble like the bee, King like the reigning monarch. And that's about it for me. How about you, Kyle?
First, I did actually want to ask you something real quick. I'm really sad Mega Man is coming to an end. It makes me sad. I almost don't want that last issue. I don't want it, because I don't want to face the fact that it's gone.
You want that last issue.
Well, on hiatus, let's say. On hiatus. Anyway,
you
go ahead.
You want Mega Man 55, because we poured our hearts and souls into it.
Oh, I'm sure you did. I'm sure
it's
fantastic.
The entire series has been a love letter to the franchise, and this last issue is no exception. It is one giant love letter to all things Mega Man.
Okay. I will read it solemnly, but I will read it. Also, with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, with you working on that book, can you maybe hint as to anything else coming along with that? Or is that the only thing so far coming up?
Well, I do have a lead story that's coming out. Is it issue 6 or issue 7? Not too long after that one. It's going to be a two-part story. It focuses on the villains. It's going to be drawn by one of my most favoriteest people, Chad Thomas. And it's going to be a load of fun. And I got other things percolating on the back burner, but I can't talk about those just yet.
Now that's exciting. All right. As for me, by the way, you can find me and my stuff over at kngi.org, where you can also find this podcast. You can find episodes of Game Fuel and Nitro Game Injection, my video game music shows. If you're interested in video game music and video game music remixes and arrangements, be sure to go check those out. You can follow me on Twitter, at KyleJCRB, and like Nitro Game Injection on Facebook. Actually, it's the KNGI Network now. So, yes, definitely go check those, all those out. And be sure to give the show, this show right here, The Bumblecast, be sure to head over to iTunes and give us a review. We have one nice review over there already, so if you guys want to throw up any more over there, it would really help us out. The more reviews we have over there, the more eyes and ears we get on the show, which is always a good thing. So help us grow the show a little bit. You got anything else, Ian?
I don't think so. We're going to have one more Bumblecast before the end of the year, and then we will be moving into 2016. But until then, happy holidays to all of you, and may the Force be with you.
Always. Is that the traditional Life Day carol?
Oh god, don't even start.
Thank you for listening to the Bumblecast. Please subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review on iTunes. Find more episodes at bumbleking.com and kngi.org. Bumblecast is copyright Bumbleking Comics. Original music composed by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more music from Coda at bc.s3n.us. Pay what you want for the intro theme. As part of the compilation album Noise Chan and Nugget, Adventures in Chiptune at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com.